Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The end of 2018 is approaching, and with that becomes lists, people of the year, persons of the year, sportsmen, sportswomen of the year. Here at the Bubble, Montana Samuels, I'm Mike Bonner. We don't have any lists.
No.
But Time Person of the Year 2018 came out on Tuesday. I'm trying to think of the day. And we're interested in it because the Person of the Year is the Guardians and the War on Truth.
So the people of the year, the idea of the year, perhaps.
It's the second consecutive year where more than one person was named Person of the Year. Last year, the Silence Breakers really sparked the Me Too movement, were the Person of the Year. So again, there's another movement here, and Montana and I wanted to dive into the selection. Really, it's based off of journalists who were murdered.
Yeah,
captured.
Killed or imprisoned.
For their work. And I think the key might be there is directly because of their work. Weren't.
Yes.
To me, because they wanted to be silenced. That's, I think, the line that needs to be drawn here, where certainly no one, I mean, any death at any level is
big news. Yeah,
like. Unfortunate. It's really, it's disheartening. It's sad. But I think the distinguishing here should be the journalists mentioned are people whose work resulted in powerful people or people in general. It doesn't necessarily have to be powerful,
right,
that wanted them to be silenced. Whereas this wasn't a journalist covering a war with in a tank, so to speak, an army tank in the tank. Just
right.
This was someone trying to silence them.
Yeah.
Or people trying to silence them.
I don't think... So the Capital Gazette one is the only one that may be like a little different, just because I think that was a person who wasn't so... I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's as specific, but definitely a person who was upset by the idea that journalists were reporting something in a way that he did not take kindly.
It was about him, and he didn't appreciate it, and he took actions into his own hand and killed five people.
Yeah.
So again, that's the people of the year. And I'm going to be honest, when I first saw it, it was interesting to me. I guess I'll start at the end. I won't bury the lead. After a lot of discussion, going back and forth.
This is basically the second podcast.
I like it. But initially, I wasn't sure because, you know, I'll just go into my background. Covering or learning about journalism at Syracuse University, one of the main things that I always took from it was journalists should never be part of the story. You're there to cover the story. You're there to report on the story, but you should never become the story at all, at any means necessary. Never become part of the story, ever. And so to me, this just made me feel a little uncomfortable because it was journalists becoming the story. And it was just so ingrained in my head that you're there to report. You're almost like a fly in the wall, not even a fly in the wall. You're an invisible person. You shouldn't even be acknowledged or know that you're there. You're just there to report literally what's happening. So to me, that's why initially reading this, I didn't know how I felt about it.
I think adding on to that a little bit too, it wasn't even – there are media reporters and you can – there are stories that have been written about journalists that are good, but this was journalists giving an award to journalists, which I think just I felt strange about initially. But sort of like you, the more I look into it, I've taken to the idea more than I initially thought.
Yeah.
And I think it sort of goes into two parts, right? Like we went into it saying, well, this is part of, like, these circumstances are a really unfortunate reality to journalists who want to cover these types of stories. And I'm sure you have professors who worked in the industry that knew people that had terrible things have happened to in the field, much like I do. And, but after thinking about it, it just, you sort of get more into the moment that this occupies, right? It is a heightened time in terms of dangers for journalists in the field. And these people were reporting on really important issues, especially in the case of the two reporters that were reporting in Myanmar, to me in particular. That was a story I took to this year. So, yeah, it took us a while to come around, but our pessimism has faded a little bit. We're there. We get it a little bit.
I think, yeah, the idea of war on truth and showing it
right
in a way, because I think another part of journalism is the ability to show, not tell,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, you know, not inserting yourself in a story. Mm-hmm. And this is really a unique way to show
the framing's important. The framing's really important.
That war on truth, because it's, I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting in front of my computer and looking at Twitter or reading stories and being as advanced as we are in terms of evolution and being on this world for, this is the year 2018. So in theory, you know, even you say a couple thousand years after right. Jesus Christ walked the earth, are we really questioning whether the earth is round? Are we really
sure
balking at scientific evidence that
yep.
the world, the climate is changing? It's just really bizarre to me. And I think Late Night does a really good job of putting this, showing it, of mm-hmm. we see all these movies like Armageddon or,
right.
you know, where scientists come and say, oh, there's an asteroid that's going to strike the earth and yep. we're all going to die. And then the humans come together with that piece of factual information
right.
and try to change it. Here in 2018, it seems like facts don't matter. It's what your opinion is. And then regardless of what anything, any evidence shows, people's opinions outweigh
yeah.
scientific evidence.
Well, and I think the elephant in the room here, too, is, of course, the sitting president and sort of the idea. So you're talking about people denying scientific fact. And I think another big thing that's come up this year is people holding politicians accountable with, like, video clips and framing that with the... often the scenario goes, a reporter asks a question about something that was said at a prior speaking engagement. The politician says, I didn't say that. Another reporter or said reporter will then fact check it and often provide video evidence. So it's not even so much that it's these new concepts that people are rigid about accepting. It's literally just, I didn't say that, but there's video evidence of it. So it's manipulating this individual political narrative, which I think is, and like Dan, people like Daniel Dale of the Toronto Star, right, have done a really good job of sort of fact checking these things and creating that as a movement. So I think these people are definitely the faces of the guardians of the war on truth. But I think it's, if you're going to talk about journalism and people who have confronted it, there's a lot of context that needs to be included, right? And there's people who have impacted it in ways that are important, but haven't paid like the ultimate sacrifice, if you will, right?
Yeah, I think the thing that I focused on that really won me over was the war on truth. And I think, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, the Guardians show that.
Let's talk about that idea a little bit then.
Yeah, because it's the idea that, you know, these people paid the ultimate price because they were bringing truth to light.
Right.
And even, as you said, the Capital Gazette, they were reporting on a domestic issue, a domestic yep. violence issue, and this person didn't like it and then tried to silence them. Regardless if he even knew that who was there, who wasn't, he still took matters into his own
yeah.
hands.
Sidebar, probably not good for his other legal case.
It's a really good way to show the extreme measures people will go to hide the truth, where
mm-hmm.
it's funny because when you say the truth and what matters and things that happened, I'm scrolling through their list right now. None of it matters. Their list wouldn't be there wouldn't be a list or nominees to be had if we didn't know what people did factually, what happened.
Right.
So it's kind of really, it's the most important thing that we wouldn't have jobs if truth didn't matter.
Yeah.
A lot of things wouldn't, I mean, no, I don't, it's tough to me to figure out who would have a job if truth didn't matter. I mean, think of the first responders or police or fire. If every call wasn't factually based, where do we go? Society doesn't, it ceases to exist if truth doesn't matter, or doesn't exist, rather. I guess if it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, I think that's sort of why we were not so quick to give this our full support, though, right? Is because the definition of the job for journalists is just to do that. So, yeah, if you look at the surface level, you're giving someone an award for doing their job. But I think that's why the framing is so important.
I agree.
It's almost, it really is an idea more so than the people of the year. We're honoring, it's like an honoring of the people who were doing really, really important work and that either lost lives or were in prison for that important work. But it's the idea of sort of the everyday like fight to get truth telling and build the journalistic trust with the public, which I think that sort of was one of the main things I took from this, because you also have to look at what's going to come, what will be the end result of you putting four journalists or groups of journalists on each cover. Do you think that this, my initial thought was this would not help the public perception of journalists, because I think people are often smart enough to say, well, there's journalists giving journalists an award in a time where like we already don't believe them. What do you think? Do you think this helps at all? Or do you think this is just sort of an acknowledgement that like we, your peers, see you?
I don't know, because part of the thing that it is the facts matter.
Yeah,
that's the that's the bottom line, is, and this is what it's kind of pointing out, because there are journalists who will say that people are trying to silence them, and it's not necessarily the conspiracy theorists. I'll say that conspiracy theorists is probably a better way to say these were people who actually died who were silenced for what they were reporting on. There will be people who will say the person who was the Hillary Clinton aide, I believe, who
we don't even need
to look it up, because it's not. You know, it was
something rich,
but it was found to be untrue. But there were reports that he was killed in Washington, D.C. as a part of a bigger cover up. And that's, you know, the silence of the facts there. That's not what this should be.
By a quasi journalist. Right. Alex Jones.
It should be this isn't saying that. That's what my fear is.
Yeah.
Is that it gets snowballed or pushed down the road into exactly. This is exactly what we've been talking about, that they're covering up the truth.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
so kind of, because, and the same thing I think I've said on this pod before, to me, a journalist has a really loose definition, because if you have a Twitter account, and I believe it was when Osama bin Laden was killed, there was just a guy who heard, you know, explosions and helicopters, and he was tweeting about it. Now, he's not really a professional journalist, but he was passing along information that mattered. To me, that, you know, if you're passing along important information, there is some reporter asked, you're reporting on an event.
Yeah.
It just depends on what you do with, as we've talked about many, many times on this pod, what you do with that power of
because
your voice.
Yeah, the alternative, obviously, is sort of the right wing.
You can take and run with it.
I don't know. I think that's a good point.
I think that's the scary thing too, is I agree with you in terms of when you mentioned like a right wing journalist, but then I think it's really truly anyone, a conspiracy theorist.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we look at, you know, someone who I think is pretty progressive thinking, a Steph Curry, who says, who doesn't want to go to the White House because of Donald Trump, whose coach, Steve Kerr, is one of the leading progressive voices, if not the leader, in the NBA.
Right.
And he doesn't think that the United States landed on the moon. because it's a big cover-up that the media... Steph Curry doesn't.
Steph Curry doesn't think that the
At least he said it on a podcast. Now, whether he was joking or not remains be seen, but he hasn't corrected it.
Jeez.
So, again, it's thinking that the truth is being covered up for some way that I think this could be unfortunately taken advantage of and spun in the wrong direction, where journalism isn't conspiracy theories. It's reporting truths, which is... what the point of the thing, I think, was.
A separate podcast would be why the NBA is so prone to conspiracy, but we won't go down that rabbit hole. What do you think? So my mind immediately went to, what do you think the public reaction to this will be, right? So, like, this is rather new still. How do you think... how do you imagine that people within the industry will respond to this? Do you think it'll be sort of... do you think it'll be polarized, or do you think people will come out in full-throated support of it?
I hope the response is what we had, which was a discussion and analyzing, which should be a lot of things. I think that would be my hope. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's going to reaction? People are going to like it. People are going to hate it.
Right.
Like anything else.
Yeah. I haven't found... I just did a quick Google and haven't really found like one of those like aggregated posts yet of like, here's all the Twitter reaction, but I'm curious to see. So what do you think moving forward? What do you think? I'm hoping that this will sort of...
I would be interested to see what the reaction is, because there's going to be people who like it. There's going to be people who don't. But I would be curious to see if the overwhelming response is positive.
Yep.
Because I would guess this has to be, when I go through and look at the past winners, the groups seemingly would be more positively respected. Now, individual people, obviously, that is whether you like someone or not. But for example, 2017, the Silence Breakers. I don't think a lot of people were saying, oh, why would you pick them? Ebola fighters in 2014. I can't see a lot of people being like, oh, no, what a terrible choice. At least maliciously, you know what I mean?
Right.
The protester in 2011 representing many global movements, protests. Maybe... you know, the U one in 2006 may have brought some lameness, but that's 2005. The Good Samaritans, Bono, Bill Gates, Melinda Gates. It goes
Bono?
On.
Bono, oh boy,
we're not going back to the whistleblowers in 2002. So I think it'd be interesting to see, like, when you have 1993, the Peacemakers, basically saying, who's going to come out and say, how could you pick the Peacemakers?
Right.
It's very broad. Yeah.
I feel like the cover's gotten more polarizing over the last couple of years. But maybe that's just because of the times we live in, rather than...
But last year was the Silence Breakers. Do you think a lot of people were really up in arms?
Maybe
they
were.
Not.
I don't know. Actually, yes. Yeah, I 100% do.
No, you're...
totally.
Yeah, because there were people...
That's a political... Whether we want to acknowledge it or not, that is a 100% political issue at this point in time.
Does that not come back to the war on truth, though?
Because, no, I think it totally...
Silence break... Like, someone saying that they were sexually abused is not political, nor is someone saying, hey, the ice caps are melting. Those aren't...
They aren't political issues,
they're
but
facts.
In 2018, they're 100% political issues. Because everything is policy or an attack on your agenda in 2018, right?
I mean, if you focus on the war on truth, I think they picked the right...
No,
thing
totally.
Then.
This is not a condemnation of the pick, right? It's just sort of like an...
Sure.
In ideology, this will be taken as an affront to one group, probably. I just looked up Donald Trump's Twitter, right? He has yet to respond to the Time cover, which he may not. But his last tweet starts with the two words fake news, which I would like you to note that F and N on fake news are capitalized.
He was one of the runners up.
Yeah. Well, and I think maybe...
Donald Trump, Robert Mueller, Ryan Coogler, March for Our Lives activists who were the Parkland students.
Which is actually what I wanted to get into, right? So we...
Can I say the two more?
Yeah.
Moon Jae-in and Meghan Markle.
Right. So what I wanted to move us into is maybe when I saw that March for Our Lives was also nominated, Mike and I sort of got into, well, that seems like the other logical pick, right? Which I immediately thought, well, this is interesting because it's now less about, this is, has been at times an award about individuals. And it seems like moving into the present, unless you as an individual are a truly remarkable, like, shifter of culture.
Elected leader. I feel like when they're...
Yeah, probably...
Trump was 2016.
Or Bono.
There's like 80 different selections and you focus on the one Bono.
I mean, you too.
He was part of a group.
He, you remember that time the U2 album got downloaded to everyone's iPhone? That was weird.
I didn't have an iPhone, so...
Well, there you go. But anyway, so... The fact that the two most likely, or like maybe in our opinion, most notable nominees were groups, I immediately just thought of the difference in how messaging happens now, right? So it's so, like, the March for Our Lives was almost totally created on the internet, on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to see, like, where that leads, right? Because, I mean, you can also say that a lot of the reporting done by the people who were on the cover was done through the internet, right? People aren't picking up physical newspapers the way they once were. These are stories that were reported through the internet. So I just thought it was interesting to see the way that social media was represented in the nominees, just as an idea, I guess, right? Like how impactful that is without us sort of realizing it, even though we are probably acutely aware of it on this podcast because we talk about it at length. But what do you think about the idea that these types of things will start to be shaped by like how people are interacting with social media and how messages spread through that?
I think, it's just a new form of media, right? I think all of the people who, you know, were named Person of the Year, they were at that. They were named because of the flow of information.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's the way information is now spread at its quickest.
Right.
But I do think it allows for a larger group, and I think that's maybe why you see, you know, a group like the March for Our Lives activists, yeah, or the Silence Breakers last year, because people can take power into their own hands rather than depending on
like an individual voice,
yeah,
that has like a position of power, right?
Yeah, or a leader, so to speak. Like there wasn't a spokesperson or a person who stood out of the Silence Breakers. You know what I mean? It was a collective.
Yeah, it was group. Purely a collective.
Same,
yeah,
with the March for Our Lives. There's, you know, obviously...
I mean, same with the Guardians of Journalism.
Exactly,
really. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think... I think it when you have a specific cause like that, I think social media allows for a strength in numbers type of thing, where someone says, yeah, you know, I experienced that too, which is, I think, exactly what we saw with the Silence Breakers last year was... Someone is brave enough to come forward, and then, yeah, it sparks other people, and then you have this movement.
Yeah, I wonder if that'll be like a shift in thinking in general, right? Where you start there's no longer as much talk about like a person you idolize, but like a series of movements or like a way of thinking or something that you.
I think that will be helpful.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah.
Because in a way, the last 2 years, if you're looking at it as a positive, mm-hmm, gesture, movements have, I feel like, fewer sins than humans. You know, no human is perfect.
Right.
When you look at, I mean, just look at how the country was founded.
Yeah.
The first president of the United States, George Washington, had slaves.
Yep.
He did a lot of... You know, that's about as about murdering
about as bad as you can get. Yeah.
But there was other things where he, you know, would we have a United States without him in terms of, you know, uniting a country together?
Right.
Where there are a lot of great things about this country. There are a lot of terrible things, but there are a lot of great things now. That, and I feel like sometimes when you idolize or look up to one specific person. It's really difficult because people are flawed. You're not going to find someone and like say, hey, I love this dude or love this woman. And
there's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing there.
It's not really possible. So I think that would be really interesting is if people start latching onto causes or latching onto ideas rather than latching onto people. Like where do you get your inspiration from? An idea, a movement rather than, oh, well, this person, the next person is, whoa, that person doesn't do this or whatever.
Well, it sort of is an interesting contrast though, right? Because if you look at, we're talking about these movements being really impactful and sort of being really important, but it is worth noting, and I mentioned this earlier, there probably isn't as serious of a shift towards both of these movements if it weren't for the sitting president, right? I mean, I think both of those movements were sort of emphasized by the actions of Donald Trump, whether that be on Twitter or at different speaking engagements or what have you. I mean, especially this one, the guardians of the war on truth. I mean, the war on truth is a purely, like, that is Donald Trump versus fact, right? I mean, I think time has spread it out to different regions of the world, but it's worth noting, it's not like these terrible things that were happening in Myanmar weren't happening before, right? It's mm-hmm. not like journalists in different South American countries or countries across the world aren't being threatened because of what they're writing and have it's not like this just started. It's just that this is now an American issue as well, which is maybe something I also was a little bit skeptical about at first, but I'm glad that they included other reporters as well or journalists as well. It's just strange. Like, I think it's important for an American magazine to sum this up as like these 4 years will be guided by the issues that come from a Donald Trump presidency, right? But it was just it almost seemed at first like it was avoiding the elephant in the room, even though I do think it's a criticism of it.
When it comes to reporting in truth and working with anyone, really, you're going to report on things. It just so happens that you're going to report on stories that public figures don't like. It just is what it is.
Yeah, it's part of the job. It is the job almost.
Right. But there's a difference between disagreeing and not liking what's printed.
Right.
Or published or whatever, and spinning it. Or trying to, you know, play damage control.
The narrative, yeah.
Playing damage control, I guess is the best way to say it. Like, well, this is kind of what happened. And then just flatly saying it didn't happen.
Right.
You know, just saying, no, wrong.
And then
it's
getting
wrong.
People to believe you, despite the glaring facts of the matter.
Yeah. But, and I think because that, it goes back to, you know, society and like, there are kind of rules of a society and things that happen need to be had. I mean, you don't. I look back and I think it. I mean, imagine if the United States didn't acknowledge that Russia went into space first, and just said no, it didn't happen. Like it made them better. You know, it made the country stronger because you wanted to then compete and get into space rather than no, it didn't happen. We'll just get there when we get there and. They faked it. You know, that was a fake space landing and never happened, or fake space mission, and we'll be the first ones. It's just you're not playing the game.
Yeah, it's not advancing. Yeah, it also it's not helpful.
It's like, not helpful.
Yeah, it is interesting to see that. I mean, in reading through the blurbs about the list of nominees, like all of these are people who were challenging people in power aside from the Capital Gazette one, but it's the Rappler in the Philippines.
I think that's a common theme throughout. The person of the year anyways, just to define power, but
I suppose this is better because people in political positions of power. Yeah.
Because you could say in 2016 Donald Trump was challenging the political power of the United States.
Sure. He was certainly shifting it, right? Or like
Pope
changing
Francis
the
in
way
2013.
The game Yeah.
Silence Breakers.
The only difference being is that they were doing that from within the confines of politics or the Catholic Church, right? Whereas these people are sort of outside agitators who are reporting on things that could be damaging to the structure of politics in this case in particular.
I think for our, you know, circumstance, I'm just going back and looking, you know, you have to go back to basically 2011. The protester was, you know, just a, not really any specific person. That's why I really liked the Silence Breakers last year, because it kind of, you know, it touches on our theme of the power of social media and the power that it gives you. Because here, journalists are doing their jobs. You know, the Ebola, Ebola fighters, they were doing their job. You know, it wasn't like you and I could go and, you know, cure Ebola.
Sure, no,
But, like, really, the Silence Breakers were people from all walks of life just really telling their story and using the power of social media. And I think that's that's something, you know, we touch on a lot in this show, but also would be interesting going forward. It gets into a little bit here too, 18, just the flow of information.
Yeah. Is there any person or idea that you would have liked to see on the list? I don't know if I have one in particular, but I sort of just wanted to ask you about it.
This probably should have been something we discussed.
I know.
Pre-pod.
Yeah. I'm now thinking about it, and I'm like, how did we not get there?
I don't think... You know, what I like about this, and I... See, as a person who looks at these lists, and especially following up a Silence Breakers person of the year, I like the idea, even if I say didn't agree with the war of the Guardians and the war on the truth, I like that it's switched up a little bit. I know we disagreed a little bit on this pre-pod, but I like the idea that it's not just a person, or I like to think about it. I like to discuss it. Whereas, and you can have an in-depth conversation rather than if it was a Donald Trump or Robert Mueller. There's not really a conversation to be had because it's not an issue. It's black and white.
The Robert Mueller one's kind of strange. I don't.
I think because he just dominates the headlines. It's top the headlines for two straight years now.
Yeah. So I guess that to what you alluded to on how we disagreed a little bit, my thought, the thought experiment I went through, well, if this is seemingly like in response to like a Donald Trump driven issue, then maybe you should just give it to Donald Trump. But I do, and thinking about it a little more, since they expanded it out to not just an American issue, I get it, certainly.
I would almost rather, I prefer actually now looking at it and looking at last year and the Silence Breakers and then even the runners up, I would have probably out of the list that it was given, Colin Kaepernick would have been one that I would have liked to see just because of the issue, because of the person of last year he was a finalist. And this year, when you look at the Guardians and the War on Truth, and then I would also think, you know, March for Our Lives activists, the issue seems... I don't think person of the year is out of date because it's something we always do, but issue is so much more interesting to me because it...
Yeah. Well, especially now, right? Current climate.
The world's a very small place. Yeah. So, and when we talk about social media, everyone can be a part of something. So there's no need to just condense it into one, especially when, not one person really stood out.
I think there are times, right? Like the infamous Hitler cover, that no-brainer.
Or Donald Trump in 2016.
Donald Trump 2016, Obama in 2008. I agree. I think as it moves forward, you'll probably see more that fall under, like obviously the title of the magazine is still Person of the Year, but it'll probably fall under like more of a issue of the year category. It'll be like easier to
describe. Because people usually drive issues. That's probably, you know, tough to have an issue that...
I will say that one of the things I was thinking of though is like part of this is a tad frustrating because like if you're willing to give the two journalists who covered the issues in Myanmar, right? If you're willing to put them on a cover, would you have put them on the cover had Donald Trump not have been such a driving force in this, or if the Jamal Khashoggi death wouldn't have happened recently, right? Like is it sort of trying to, I mean, we talked about some of the business side of journalism, right? Like if this wasn't a hot, I guess the whole notion of issue of the year, person of the year, is that it is a hot button issue. But is this not as important if this isn't currently dominating the headlines, or if Donald Trump isn't in office? Like if Hillary Clinton were in office, would you have even considered the two journalists covering Myanmar that are jailed? That's the only sort of issue I have, is like it seems like it has to be like a, recently it seems like it has to be like a pretty American thing for it to be on the cover. And it is an American magazine, so I don't know if that's necessarily a problem, but
I think, I'm trying to look here. Yeah, Vladimir Putin was in 2007, so you're almost about, yeah. It's been a while. Oh, no, Pope Francis, 2013, sorry. Oh, no, Angela Merkel was 2015.
Angela Merkel, okay.
So that was relatively recent. I was scrolling from like the 30s up, so I was like, oh, that's got to be the last one. Nope, that's got to be the last one. Nope, and then
so it's like every 5 years almost, you get a non-American issue.
Yeah, there were nominees that were not American.
Sure, yeah. Part of it is
most
just,
of them were American.
Yeah, part of it to me is just sort of this thing where it's like it almost just seems like a, this is an American issue, but we know it's going on outside of America as well, so let's spread it out, which I like, but then like maybe let's do that like more often then, which I think they do. I mean, I haven't looked at the nominees list for every single year that it's been, so I may be just picking at low-hanging fruit here, but that was just sort of my immediate read of the situation.
Yeah, I'm just looking at who, there's been a couple of here we go. The class of unnamed people, the American fighting man in 1950, the Hungarian freedom fighter in 1956, U.S. scientists in 1960, the inheritor in 1966, middle Americans in 1969, American woman in 1975, and then it jumps from 75 to 2003, so there were no unnamed people in the 80s or 90s. The American soldier in 2003, you 2006, the protester 2011, mm-hmm. Ebola fighters 2014, the silence breakers 2017, and then the guardians in 18. I don't. This is the first time that it's been back to back years.
Yeah. So I'm the only reason when you said the scientists in 1960, I'm currently reading The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And I feel like that might have been around that time. And looking back, that did not age well, if that's the case. I haven't. All that's popping up right now is just a photograph of it.
There were two inanimate objects named Person of the Year. Machine of the Year in 1982, the computer. And then in 19...
Makes sense, actually. That's good.
In 1988.
The internet?
30 years ago, right? That's 1988.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
30 years ago. This is... Are you ready to get to... We can end it on this.
It's got
to
be the internet, right?
No.
No?
Even worse.
Ooh. Television? No. I don't know. Yeah, what?
30 years ago, the endangered Earth.
Oh, my... We talked about that Nathaniel Rich New York Times Magazine thing earlier this year.
30 years ago, they were talking about
the
endangered Earth.
Yeah. Once again, go. I'm going to find the title of that article because it is really important. Nathaniel Rich wrote it for the New York Times Magazine. It is incredible. He took over the... It's called Losing Earth. Yeah, he highlights this period, right, where there were essentially the first, it's sort of an interactive display with photos and video. The first thing that pops up is 30 years ago, we had a chance to save the Earth.
Well, I'm sure there were a lot of chances to save the Earth.
Yeah, but so this, his point in this article is that there was a 10-year period from 1979 to 89 where there were legitimate steps being made towards controlling climate change. And then after, like immediately after that point or at the very end of it, it became like a financial issue for certain industries.
Oh, yeah.
And then it stopped.
The first cars were electric, like way back, but gasoline was cheaper.
Right.
Solar farms were popping up, I think before... I can't remember if it was World War One or I believe it was World War One. Were popping up, and they were going to go solar powered, but then they melted down all the metals for World War One.
Yeah,
humans.
Oh boy, yeah. Talk about a depressing way to end a podcast, but
yeah. But you know what? That brings us into 2019 and
yeah,
new opportunities. Best well, time of the year.
Yep.
Reflect on the year that was and the year that could be.
Well, let's do this, Mike, since we don't want to end on such a depressing note. One of the big things that comes out at the end of the year is obviously albums of the year list. We like music on this podcast. Mike, what's your album of the year? You got one? Oh my God, that face you made. I wish I had a camera so we could use that as the thumbnail.
I'm trying to think if I even...
Have you fully digested an album of the year this year?
I'm trying to think of like an album that was released this year that I listened to.
T-Swift. Reputation.
Was that this year?
Yeah. Eminem's Kamikaze. I'm just going through your... Yeah. Your.
Well, you know me. I'm very...
I know.
I'm
Carters. Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking of the Carter 5.
No. Oh, Lil Wayne. Yeah. Yes.
That might do it. I would say
the Lil Wayne album.
Okay, now, wow. See, again, you caught me off guard. But yeah, so I listened to T-Swift album, the Drake album, the Kanye album, the Kid Cudi album.
Oh, Kids See Ghosts.
What else? Then you mentioned the Lil Wayne. I would go with Drake and Lil Wayne. Those are my two.
Scorpion, really?
Scorpion.
Okay. All right.
Scorpion and the Carter Five.
I'll give it to you. I have a couple.
Oh, and Kamikaze. I forget about Kamikaze.
Don't add.
I'm just going to put Kamikaze just because that's album of the year. Go, it's
horrible.
Go buy it. Go
album
buy
of the
a bunch
year.
Of them. This is what this is my point of the list as I talk about people of the year, just because I know that Montana is going to blow up the pod after this.
No.
None of this will reach the day.
I'm not going to blow up the pod. I just have
Kamikaze.
A couple. Yeah, Kamikaze.
Free M.
I really like...
I don't know from
wait, free who?
M. I don't know why. I just...
Free him?
Took your phrase and just used it for my own.
He's not currently incarcerated.
Well, it was... Again, it's just... none of it has to really make sense. It's just more of to get under the skin
under
of Montana.
My skin? Okay.
Samuels. I mean, what kind of a year would it be if I didn't?
That's true. Perfect year end. I'll leave with a couple of albums people should listen to. Swimming, the swan song of the late Mac Miller. Is just a really good album and sort of is like a perfect cap to like a, well, not a perfect, it just like is sort of a fitting, like if this is going to be the last body of work he put out, like this is a good one to end on. The new Earl Sweatshirt album, Some Rap Songs, I thought that was really good. It came out at the end of the year, so I'm not sure it'll appear on too many lists, but for the sake of this podcast, I will add it. And let's go with Soccer Mommy, Clean. Really good album. Sort of like indie. She's like one of the people leading that like cohort of really awesome, impactful like female indie singer-songwriters or band leaders. And people should listen to that.
I have not heard this album, but I heard it was named like Album of the Year by some ranking thing. Janelle Monáe's album.
Dirty Computer is up for a lot of Grammys as well. I'm sure we'll be doing a Grammy pod at some time.
2019, can't wait.
We hate the Grammys. But yeah, I don't. People really like the Janelle Monáe album. It's a little. It's thought out. I'll say that. That's both a good thing and a bad thing. It just hurts my head a little bit. Shout out to Janelle Monáe. And shout out to Mike Bonner for a great 2018 of the Bubble Podcast. This is sort of the end of our first year, right?
Same to you, my friend. Ditto.
Ditto. Well, this has been the Bubble.
End of 2018, but not the end of season two.
Yeah. Oh, no. We are into season two. I don't know.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, I don't know. This has been the Bubble. He is Mike Bonner. I am Montana Samuels.
Have a happy holiday and a happy new year.
Yeah, and we hope you'll have us back at the start of 2019.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.